My ma, beautiful ma, got diagnosed with dementia 4 years ago. And as most people, if everybody doesn't know, most people know that dementia doesn't get better. It just gets worse. So we're slowly watching mum kind of like get worse and stuff like that. She still knows who we are, etc. I had a lot of great help from Dementia UK. So I thought that I'd try and raise a few quid for them. So at the moment, I've raised £5,000 already. So I hope to, well, by the time I finish this five, then it'll be a lot more than that.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Running Tales podcast. I'm Craig Lewis, and that was the voice of this week's guest, Colin McCord. By the time you hear this, Colin will hopefully have completed the London Marathon on Sunday, what will have been his fourth out of five marathons in as many weeks, with the final one set to be run next week on the dreaded treadmill. Colin is fundraising to raise money for Dementia UK to take on what is a very personal challenge for him. His mum, Susan, was diagnosed with mixed dementia in 2018. Any money he raises will go towards helping Dementia UK provide information, support, and their incredible Admiral nurses. The link to his fundraising page is in the show notes, so please give generously. I also spoke to Colin about how running has helped him cope with PTSD, something which resulted from a traumatic robbery in 2001. Embracing the sport and the running community has really helped Colin with his mental health and to deal with the various curveballs that life can bring. But I started off our conversation by asking him about his current marathon challenge.
Like you said, I just finished Manchester Marathon on Sunday, which was the third one. So when I reached the half marathon point in Manchester, me and a few other people in the same kind of group were all going, I'm halfway. And I was going, yeah, I've only got two and a half to do. But three down, two to go. The why is very simple. Mum, my ma, beautiful ma, got diagnosed with dementia 4 years ago. And as most people, if everybody doesn't know, most people know that dementia doesn't get better. It just gets worse. So we're slowly watching mum kind of like get worse and stuff like that. She still knows who we are, etc. I had a lot of great help from Dementia UK. So I thought that I'd try and raise a few quid for them. So at the moment, I've raised £5,000 already. So I hope to, well, by the time I finish this five, then it'll be a lot more than that.
Fantastic. Well, we'll definitely make sure we put all your fundraising details in the show notes. So if anybody wants to go and sponsor you on there, they can do as well. But
thank you.
The most important question, you touched on it there, but give Mum a shout out. What's Mum's name and how's Mum doing?
Mum's name is her name is Susan, or Susanna. She was born. So she brought me up a single parent. There was just me until I was 12 and my sister, and she was. And still is in my head, this kind of feisty single parent, very strong, loves to travel, loves to laugh, and took me to football games at Liverpool from a very, very early age. Since I was 8 years old, she took me to Anfield by herself. She was fiercely independent. And now that's kind of, her independence is lost now because she's, I made the decision with my sister 14 months ago to put her into a care home. So her independence is gone, but her love of life, is still there from time to time. We do laugh. She knows, like I said, she knows who I am. She recognizes me and her grandchildren and my sister and others and my kids, And she loves to watch me run. Before dementia came along, she watched me, obviously growing up as a child, she watched me run around and had to chase me around and pull me back and all that sort of stuff, because that's, perhaps talk about that later, which is why I run. It certainly goes back to that kind of childhood instinct to run either from something or to something. And that's what we're doing now. But she came to see me do, when I started running, she came to New York to watch me do New York Marathon. She came to Barcelona to watch Barcelona Marathon, things like that. She never came to like Newport or any places like this. She always, She always said, whenever she asked me where I was running, if it's like New York or Barcelona or Hong Kong and places like that, she went, oh yeah, I'll come with you, Cole. That'd be great. But never Southport or Morecambe or Newport or places like that. But she supported me, through thick and thin, and certainly through my my troubles with, you know, physical health and mental health problems, which is why I run, and she supported me through that. So I can try and do that in a little bit now by trying to help the charity that has helped me and her.
I know it's probably an obvious question, but what sort of things can this money do to help people and to benefit those with dementia?
Well, Dementia UK is kind of specialist, really. They have the people called Admiral Nurses, and these guys and girls can kind of look after both dementia patients and their families. So that's what the money pays for. Dementia UK started with two Admiral Nurses, and now there's 480, but we still need a lot more. You know, in by the time 2025 comes, there'll be 1 million people in this country with dementia. So obviously with 1 million people on top of that, with 1 degree of separation, there's, you know, we probably, if we don't already have that now, we probably know somebody who has dementia. It's getting to those kind of levels. And it's in the news more now as well, with, you know, reports about sports like football and rugby. Not so long ago, Bruce Willis, the news that Bruce Willis has got dementia, all these little things that come out. They were really sad, but I suppose on the flip side of that, it brings attention to it, where sometimes, you know, it could be swept under the carpet. I don't want to get too political about it, but, you know, it's also been in the news recently that the government are, you know, halving the funding for social care reform, etc. So this is why it's in the news. So what Admiral Nurses do is they help advise you with the early stages of dementia. They help advise, you know, families when it comes to helping your loved ones, helping get things like power of attorney, and helping deal with grief. You know, I was actually on the phone with Dementia UK yesterday, speaking to a nice guy called Mark, one of the Admiral Nurses, and I had a really tough day with my mental health yesterday after seeing Mum so vulnerable a couple of days ago after she woke up from a bad dream. And he was talking about something called anticipatory grief, which basically means that while Mum is still here, I'm grieving for her. So I'm grieving for the loss of her while her body is still here. So I'm grieving, you know, it, like I said, it doesn't go away. So that's, you know, the money goes to the 480 is great. But sometimes if you phone Admiral UK, there's a wee bit of a wait. You might have to leave a message and they'll call you back, which they do, you know, 100% of the time they do. But the more people we can get, the more money that goes to Dementia UK goes to funding more Admiral Nurses and more help for both dementia sufferers and the people like me and millions of others who have that 1 degree of separation, who are caring for their loved ones.
Well, I think it's a really important cause, and it's a sad side effect, really, of the fact that the wonderful fact, really, that people are living longer these days is that things like dementia become more common. So, you know, if we can do anything to help get to the bottom of that next one, then that's obviously fantastic. In terms,
and it happens at all years as well. You know, there's early onset dementia, which can happen anytime. A friend of mine at work, their mum has dementia, and their father, I think, has had dementia but passed in the 90s. But my mum's only 77 years old. You know, it's young in the grand scheme of things. And only 5 years ago, she was traveling independently. She was shopping by herself. She was going to bingo. She was laughing. She was going to the footy by herself and doing all this. And now it's, you know, it's changed. So you're right. You know, all this money goes to helping all that.
And in terms of what you're doing, we mentioned five marathons in five.
Yeah.
You said Manchester last week. I'm assuming London is going to be this weekend. What's the full list?
So the first one, so how it started was I did Manchester Marathon last year and I thought it was brilliant. I love Manchester as a city. Even though I'm from Merseyside, there's supposed to be a rivalry, I suppose. But I worked in Manchester for many, many years. I've got great friends there. I love the city. I think it's ace. So I got the chance to run it last year, and I smashed a little bit of a PB out there last year. It's a lovely flat course, and the support is amazing. So I kind of crossed the line. I dipped at a 3:43 last year, which is great. I mean, I was so chuffed to bits with that. So, of course, as race organisers do, they're very clever as far as their psychology goes. When you've crossed the line a couple of days later, when you're in the euphoria, an email drops into your inbox saying, I hope you enjoyed Manchester. You fancy doing it again? We'll give you 10 quid off to do next year. So I was like, yeah. And I loved it. It was brilliant. So I wanted to do it again. So I signed up for it. And then watching London, because London was September last year, wasn't it? I was watching loads of mates do that. And I think I'd missed out on the ballot by then. But I was so inspired by my mates in who I run with in the Running Punks that, you know, they did that. So I wanted to do it. So I spoke to Dementia UK and said, can I run for Dementia UK? And they heard my story and they said, yeah, of course you can. And then they sent me the date and it was like a week after Manchester, right? I hadn't realized. So then I looked into it and then somebody had already asked me if I wanted to do the Great Welsh Marathon, which was on the 2nd or 3rd of April. So I said, no, I can't do that because I've got Manchester a couple of weeks later. But then it turned into my head in some kind of weird fever dream that I might want to do. If I'm going to do London and Manchester and London back to back, I said, I looked at the calendar and I saw this kind of like this perfect kind of like a little symmetry in the calendar. There was five Sundays in April. So I thought, I wonder if there's five marathons in April. And it turned out that there were. So, you know, before I've done, you know, I've been very fortunate enough to done some marathons before, but never done this back to back. And it hurts, but I'm glad I came up with the idea. So the first one was the Great Welsh Marathon, which is around the Llanelli area on the beautiful kind of South Wales Coast Path. So that's an out and back course and kind of home area of the Running Punks. So there was lots of us kind of doing that. It was a good trip for that. The second one was quite difficult because it was Easter weekend. So, you know, there's no races on that Easter Sunday. So I found one on the Saturday, which only gave me 6 days rest, of course, called the Magna Carta Marathon, which was a lovely kind of little race. You know, there was 250, you know, odd. It was so small. I came 16th, so that tells you a little bit about the size of the field. But I'm keeping that. I'm not going to tell anybody how many people entered. But that was a beautiful little race, really well organized by a group of guys, David and Hermes Running, it's called, and that was around the Thames Path. So that had its challenges. It was a beautiful route, but it had its challenges because it wasn't all, you know, it wasn't road, it wasn't flat surface by any means. It certainly wasn't hilly, but there's lots of muddy puddles, there's tree stumps, there's lots of things to trip over and always a river to your right or left that you might fall in if you fall over. So that was great. Manchester last week with a couple of mates, again, some running punks and a few others on the trip there, which was brutal because my body had certainly started to feel it by the end of the second one. And then I had a really strong 14 miles. First 14 miles running with a mate of mine, Laura, who went on to smash a PB she smashed a 3:50. So we ran together for the first half marathon, both kind of crossed half marathon at 1:55 or whatever it was, cruising. And then my body kind of remembered, hang on a second, you've ran two marathons in 2 weeks, mate, and you're 52. So let me remind you of that. So I got some cramp in the calf and my knee and my Achilles started to hurt, my feet, my hips. And so I stopped at a medic at 14 miles to say I need a little bit of help here. And they massaged my tight calves and I told them about my knee and they said, okay, right, it's probably best you DNF, it's probably best you don't do this. So of course I ignored that and kept running. But the last 12 miles were certainly tough. And if it wasn't for the kind of support of my wife and the crowds in Manchester and knowing what I have to do, you know, I certainly wouldn't have got there. So this week has been a struggle because it's certainly getting harder to recover. I have no frame of reference running back-to-back marathons. So the actual physical and mental side of it is more, it's harder than I anticipated. I knew it was going to be hard. I have no illusion that I could just breeze this. But certainly the mental side of it is tough and the physical side of it, I'm aches and pains. Actual muscular thing is kind of gone away. I'm fine as far as that, but it's little niggles. It's the body saying, right, your Achilles are tight, your knees are sore, your hips and all that sort of stuff. And I'm trying not to tell my body that I'm whispering it very quietly that I'm going to London to do another one on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this will come true, but I'm going to say it anyway, because maybe it'll give you a little mental boost. But I've read a few books in the past. You may have read similar things about people who do crazy challenges or run for days and days on end. And the thing that I hear quite a lot is early on, they will pick up these injuries and they'll constantly get niggles. And then there'll come a time where suddenly they'll head out and the body will be kind of fine for some reason. The body just gives up moaning. So with a bit of luck, that'll be Sunday. But I also know, if I've got this correct, that you are kind of giving yourself the biggest challenge of the lot right at the end. Am I right in thinking you're doing your final one on a
Yes. Yeah, there was an option to do other ones on the 30th. There are other marathons, I think Milton Keynes and other bits and pieces. But again, in some kind of weird fever dream, because I work in John Lewis, I had this, and we sell treadmills. There's, you know, we have Peloton selling their kit downstairs. We have other companies selling their treadmills downstairs. So I thought, I know on a busy Sunday, the kind of like May bank holiday, just before the May bank holiday, I'll run a marathon on a treadmill. We'll get the team from Dementia UK down. We'll get some bands and we'll get some press and all that sort of stuff. And I'll run around. And John Lewis said, yeah, Col, crack on, as long as it's your day off. So it is. So yeah, my last marathon is on a treadmill. So we'll see how Sunday goes. I might just try and go to the shoe section and buy a pair of Heelys and switch the treadmill on and see if I can balance for 4 hours. But it's going to be tough, you know. Everybody talks about the treadmill. They call it the treadmill, and you know. And I've not run long distances on the treadmill. I tried it a couple of times this winter when it was slippy and cold and minus whatever out there. I went to the gym and I think the longest time I did on a treadmill was about an hour and a half. And yeah, it felt like, it felt like you could have watched both Avatar movies on the iPad, but even though you only ran, an hour and a half. So it is what it is, you know. They're not hard. Marathons aren't easy. But it's, you know, I'm constantly being told it's going to be the hardest, but I'm going to be surrounded. My mum's going to be able to sit there and watch me, and she's going to be able to sit on a sofa. You know, I've got no water stations to worry about. I don't have to worry about carrying a load of gels and all that sort of stuff. And I think the hardest part of it is going to be my love of running has always been about kind of forward momentum and looking for signs that I'm going forward, whether it be mile markers in long runs or in races, or whether it be trees or whether it be distances is when I'm out running. I like the idea of being outside and breathing the fresh air and doing all that. But there's a reason, the reason I'm doing it is because I thought, hey, if I do Milton Keynes marathon, I could probably raise another 500 quid. If I do a marathon on a treadmill, you know, with a John Lewis shop full of people, I could probably raise another, a few thousand, which would go to that. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, I wish you luck with it. I mean, I've never done more than 10K on a treadmill. And
it's nonsense. I'm frightened.
Have that sort of interminable feeling even then, but I'm sure it'll be fun. Just moving on slightly, I wanted to talk about some of the reasons why you run. And yeah. I don't know whether this is how you got into running in the first place, but I know that one of the reasons why you run is because you've had or have PTSD. Do you want to tell us about that? I don't know how much you want to go into in terms of detail of what happened. It's entirely up to you, really.
Yeah, I mean, I'll paint it with a broad brush, I suppose. You know, like I said, the love of running, I'm a great believer, comes at the earliest age when you can start. You can start actually walking. You know, I've got two of my own. I'm father of two, but a dad to four. If you know what I mean, we've got a kind of a little super family. So I've seen, you know, kids grow up, and certainly when they start walking, they want to start running, and they're always trying to run away or run to something. And that kind of, a lot of times when kids are running, they're giggling and they're running away, and that sort of beauty, I think that's brilliant. So I did that when I was a kid. You know, obviously my mum said I was running, and it sounds a bit Forrest Gump, but I was running everywhere I was going. But most of the time I had probably a football at my feet. You know, obviously growing up in Merseyside, the ball's around, not oval, and you kick it, you don't pick it up. So I always had a foot at my feet going around, and that kind of like romantic view of the 80s where it was just like, it was all just covered in mud, and we didn't come home till we were shouted and it was tea time, and then we went out again and played footy. So I think it's a similar story to a lot of people, you know, whether it's the same these days, I'm not sure, but it was, you know, I'm 52 now, like I said, so it was a similar story to a lot of people. We didn't have much, but we could afford a footy. We knew where the park was, so we ran around and we did it with our mates, and that was our kind of community stuff. I ran a bit in, as far as running races, I was quite good at sports day, so the 800 and the 1500 meters, which is, as you probably remember, when you've got little legs when you're 12 years old, you know, 800 meters and 1500 meters feels like a long, long way. But I was good at those. You know, I certainly, I don't remember winning them, but I remember coming in the top, certainly in the top 10. And then I got into hospitality. I was in, you know, as a grown up, in inverted commas, I got into hospitality. I was bartending, in this country and around the world. So I kind of got into the hospitality lifestyle, which is in the food and drink trade. You kind of work 90 hours a week and you party for 80 hours a week sometimes, especially when I was doing it in the 90s and thousands. You know, you work hard, play hard, which is that old adage. And the only reason you got a break in hospitality or in kitchens is if you smoked. So you sort of take up smoking so you could get a 10-minute break every couple of hours. Yeah. So I did, and it kind of went away. You know, I kicked a footy every now and again for a couple of Sunday league teams, but I wasn't running in a straight line. It was, you know, again, with a football. But when I, August the 6th, 2001, I was the victim of an armed robbery. So again, to paint it with broad brush strokes, a few guys came into a place that I was working. I was the only one there. They robbed the place. There wasn't much left. They were upset with that. And I, you know, I played ball, but they tied me up and they, you know, they left me for dead basically after what they did to me. And after the robbery, the couple of them stayed and decided to take it out on me a little bit. So after I got out of hospital, you know, the physical injuries, they healed themselves, you know, with the help that the doctors gave me, that the physical stuff kind of healed itself with the cuts and the burns and all those sort of stuff. But the mental side of it kind of stuck around and still does from time to time. You know, it's a little bit, you know, it's compared a little bit like grief. It never goes away. It sometimes gets better. And I can help myself with, I have helped myself with various things like CBT and getting the right counselor, which took a while. And then I suppose serendipity again is that the right counselor that I got was a runner. So they knew the kind of, I'm not a scientist or a counselor by any means, but they knew the science behind endorphins and serotonins and the hippocampus and all that sort of stuff and how exercise, whether it be running or swimming or whatever, can help you as far as increasing the, you know, increasing the circulation to the brain and helping with your sleep patterns and things like that. And my life choices during the pit of my despair and at the lowest level when I was circling the drain with my PTSD, my life choice was bad. I certainly was a million miles away from crossing the line of, you know, running around the block, never mind doing a marathon. So I've come a long way. So I was smoking, I was drinking to a point where I would sleep. I was horrible to myself and my family, my closest. It cost me a relationship and it cost me friends and things like that. But I eventually found the right person. And like I said, he helped me. He said he was going to be my airbag, which I found quite good because we were talking about music and one of my favorite bands is Radiohead and they have a song called Airbag. So hence, if you go onto my Twitter handle, I am the Jackknife Juggernaut because it's a line from a Radiohead song. So that's where it comes from. He said he was going to be my airbag. We talked about running and I kind of like went, yeah, no, I used to like it. I used to love it. Why don't I do it again? So I did, and I got into it. And as well as running, he got me encouraged with trying to help others and encouraged to talk to others either while running, in volunteering with running groups for people who either suffer with PTSD or mental health problems, to just volunteering and chatting. I apologize if I'm talking too much, but one thing that sticks into my head very is he quoted something from a television drama called The West Wing, where he spoke about, he told a little story about there's this guy who falls down a hole and he can't get out of the hole. And he's shouting up at the hole. He's saying, I can't get out, I can't get out. And a priest walks past and he said, oh, thank God you're here, Father. I need to get out of this hole. And he said, the priest says, certainly, I'll help you. And he throws him down a Bible and walks off. And he said, what am I supposed to do with that? And then a doctor walks past and he said, oh, doctor, I'm stuck down this hole. I can't get out. So he says, I'll help. And he writes him out a prescription and throws him down the prescription. And of course, he can't get out. And his mate walks past. He says, oh, Dave, thank God you're here. I'm stuck down this hole. Can you help me? And Dave said, yeah. So he jumps down the hole and he's with him. And he said, well, what are you doing? You jumped down here. Now we're both stuck down here. And he said, yeah, but I've been down here before and I know the way out. Yeah. And that's stuck with me forever. You know what I mean? So I do as much as I can to try and help others. But he got me into running. So I perhaps did it not the wrong way, so to speak. But when I got into running, I would, you know, there certainly wasn't a Garmin on my wrist. I didn't know anything about interval sessions or tempo runs or all these kind of bits and pieces that I do now. And that Jimmy, my running coach from the Running Punks, kind of gives me all my running plans, which makes me better at it. I used to just go out and run dead quick, and that probably made it worse, but I really enjoyed it. I liked sometimes listen to music, listen to podcasts like yours. I listened to, but a lot of the time I would just listen to the sound of my feet, the air in my lungs and whatever it was.
Yeah. I mean, that was that West Wing quote. I remember it was Josh, I think, speaking.
Yeah, it was Josh and Leo.
Yeah, it's really, really good stuff. But I'm just thinking how, I mean, you almost made it sound, and maybe it was, like it was quite, not an easy, but that when that running was suggested, you went, yeah, that's great. But I'm sort
it
of thinking
the situation sense, that I you suppose.
Were in, I just wonder whether it, because for most people who are recovering from something like PTSD, I'm kind of guessing the natural things would be what you went to first: drink, drugs, smoking, whatever. I'm not saying you did drugs, but you know.
No, I did. Yeah, of course. Anything to kind of
someone to turn around and say running, you'd go, oh, do you know what? I've gone through something horrible. The last thing I want to do is to do something else horrible.
Yeah, of course, and it certainly I didn't. You know, I perhaps made it sound as if it was kind of like this instant kind of euphoric moment that all of a sudden I just went out and bought a pair of shoes from Up and Running. That wasn't the case. My initial reaction was, you know, was to certainly go back and get in the fetus position and close the curtains and go and buy some vodka or whatever to get through. But it was like any mental health help, whether it be CBT or whatever, or if it's like a broken leg that you put a cast on, you don't run on it straight away. You know, it took its time, and that was my mental physio. And part of that at the end of it was the kind of like the 2008-09 version of a couch to 5K. My initial reaction was, yeah, no, it sounds like a great idea. But it was like starting a really, it reminded me of starting looking at a really massive book that somebody had told you, this is the best book in the world. It's going to change your life. But they give you this like a massive tome that's about 50 chapters and you look at it and go, I'll get to it, but it just looks like I'm not sure I can get to it now. You've got to take a run up to it. So it took a while, and it took a while of me doing CBT and other things for me to actually, you know, I think I still smoked when I was running. First of all, you know, I still drank, but I wasn't drinking to forget. I suppose I wasn't drinking to sleep. I made a conscious decision, and I'd love to be able to tell you there was one morning and I woke up and I looked to myself in the mirror and I went out running. It was, I don't remember, but I just remember the day that I came back and I actually felt better. So it probably wasn't run one. It was probably about run 10 or run 12 or whatever it was. It might have been after 2 weeks. It might have been after a month. And it felt like, hang on a tick. It feels a bit childlike now. I enjoyed that, and I wasn't out of breath. I wasn't wanting to throw up. And I actually, do you know what? I really, really want to do this again for my own sake rather than somebody telling me it's good for me. And I started to believe it because I was a skeptic about everything. I certainly was a skeptic about counselors. I was a skeptic about doctors because I always, I always had this thing about doctors because it seemed as though whenever I went to a doctor and talked to them about mental health, in 5 minutes, they'd throw a prescription of antidepressants at me. And they'd be sitting there with their kind of like, you know, sponsored golf umbrellas and things like that from these various different pharmaceutical companies that had taken them on like a golf weekend or whatever. And it always had it in my mind that they're just kind of like nodding there saying, anyway, here's some citalopram, here's some such and such, go and take this and you'll be sound. When that's not the case, you know, like I said before, if you break a leg, you put a cast on. But at the same time, when that cast comes off, you've got to do physio. You can't just take the cast off and run a marathon. You can't just take the cast off and run around the block. You've got to do physio, which my counseling was my physio and my running was my physio. So, yeah, you're right. It wasn't it wasn't just as simple as doing that. It took a while, but there was a moment I remember. I remember where I was. I was in Midsummer Norton, down in Somerset, running along a country path. It was one of those lovely summer nights when you're swallowing more kind of like flies than water or whatever. And I got back home and I thought, do you know what, this feel? I want to do this again. So that's what felt really good.
You've not stopped. Obviously, you're doing plenty of marathons now, but running is integral to everything you do in life now.
It's really, really important. And sometimes that's hard as well. You know, I talk to people as well, is that if running becomes so important to you, I have to from time to time, I have struggled with the fact that when running is so important to you for your mental health, we all have injuries, especially at my age. You know, we all have injuries. So if I have a ruptured Achilles or a calf strain, or if all these little things that I've had from time to time, or you know, runner's knee or whatever, then you go to the physio and they say, okay, I need you to take 6 weeks off. You give your head a wobble and you say, okay, but I'm not sure what to do. It's like if the doctor were to take, okay, I need to take 6 weeks of medication off you. They wouldn't do that. So it's a struggle sometimes. And I talk to a lot of people that running has become very, very important to me, but that you have to find, I have to personally find that when I'm injured, which you do get from time to time, is you have to find something else to kind of fill that void, that void. It's whether it's the endorphins or whether it's the serotonin or whatever, you know, when I get injured, I kind of get a different kind of mind, try to get a mindset after a couple of days of having the ump and that genuine kind of, my lip goes out and go, but I'm supposed to, you know, sometimes I've had to defer races, or sometimes I'll text Jimmy and go, I can't do this weekend or whatever. And your mates who you run with, you know, the running punks in Cardiff or Bristol, whoever, or my little group called Blake Seven in Bristol, we just kind of get out and we run. And then all of a sudden, if I text them or I WhatsApp them, or I tell them, right, my calf's blown up and my knee's blown up on my shoulder, I've got this, this, and this, I can't run for 6 weeks. So after a couple of days, it's, you know, I get my head around it and go, right, listen to the physio, because I've made that mistake before where I've gone, okay, I've Googled it and it says 3 to 6 weeks. So let's say 3 weeks. And I take the earliest possible and I'll go, yeah, I can run again. It said 3 to 6 weeks. Dr. Google said, listen to your physio, and it's not, you know, you do try and do shortcuts and things like that. But I've learned for my physical and mental health that if I want to run, that really helps me, that I do have to listen to my body and listen to my physio and talk to people. And I do other things. I'll swim, I'll get on the bike, I'll go to yoga with my wife, I'll keep active. But I'll always have it in my head that it is like a 6 or 12 week or 15 week training plan when you're training for a marathon. You've got to train for when you're better. And you can't actually do get to the start line of the marathon until you're ready. And at the same time, you can't actually do that first run post injury until your body is ready. So yeah, it's a struggle sometimes.
Yeah. And how important are both when you're fit and running, and also when you're injured, those running buddies, those running friends, you've mentioned people in the running punks, you mentioned your sort of local group. How important are they to you and I guess the running community as a whole, really?
Yeah, the running community as a whole is great. You know, I've sometimes, 95% of the time, you know, it's the same as, you know, not all human beings out there are kind. Not all human beings have the same attitude as you. And that comes with runners as well. I think I struggled at the early doors with, I went to a couple of running clubs. I won't mention them, but I went to a couple of running clubs and I struggled with the hierarchy of it. So I went to a running club and they, on an introductory session, you don't have to pay anything tonight, come along. We'll introduce you to everybody and we'll see what you're like. So when I got there, they talked to me about my 5K PB or my 10K PB, how many times a week I'd run. They would, you know, they'd do a group run. And then at the end of it, they'd say, okay, we've got three groups now. We've got a beginners, we've got an intermediate, and we've got an elite, and you would be put into this kind of group. And I struggled with that a little bit, to thinking, well, I thought running was inclusive. I thought it was just a case of, I just want to come and have a nice time and talk to some people, because I've had a, you know, I've just talked to Simon in the car park for like 20 minutes, and all of a sudden I'm in a different group than him, and we've got so much, I can't speak to him until the end of it. And I find that quite difficult, I suppose. I appreciate why they do it, I guess, but I wish there was a better way sometimes with some running clubs, the way they do it. But at the same time, the whole running community, the running community, certainly the one I'm a big part of, the running punks, is that they will celebrate and blow the trumpet for somebody who runs a marathon like myself, or 5 and 5, or somebody, the guy's doing 100-mile ultras. But at the same time, they'll blow the trumpet and beat the horns for somebody who does couch to 5K, or goes around the block, or swims 2 lengths of a swimming pool, or whatever it is, to kind of get themselves out there and get active. You know, the idea of the running punks was very simple. It was to get away from that kind of, you know, to get back to the joy of forward momentum. And that's what I talk about quite a lot, forward momentum in my physical and mental health. But at the same time, I talk to my mates about running. I talk to my mates about music. We talk to our mates about life, about kids, about all sorts. So yeah, it's really, really important. And, you know, I'll be in those conversations sometimes where it's this circular conversation about, have you run Stoke Mandeville Marathon? No. What's it like? Blah, blah, blah. Have you run, how many park runs have you run? But I'm also just as comfortable talking about where they're from and where they've traveled to and all that sort of stuff, which is great. There's a lot of conversations I have on runs with my mates, or Manchester at the weekend, or at the Max, certainly the Magna Carta with a guy I was running with there for about 21 miles. 95% of it wasn't about running. It was about family life, and it's the stuff that I like to listen to. So I like that about the running community. It all seems to be, most of the time, for the right reasons, and it encourages me to kind of go on. And I'm certainly a better runner for it, and I'm a better person for it. I'm a better runner for talking to more runners, because I train better now, which means I can run for longer. I can run, you know, as well. It brings my heart rate down. I can run. It's not about running a marathon faster. Personal bests, I don't think, you know, I talk a lot about my personal best not just being about a time. My personal best is about how I feel, as well as if it's a 21-minute 5K. But at the same time, if I feel horrible and I've had a bad dream and some flashbacks the night before because of my PTSD, I'm not at my personal best, which means I can't be a good, not a good, but I can't be in my best self for my wife, for my family, for my sister, for my mum, for my friends, and for myself. I'll start beating myself up again. And, you know, I think some of the personal journey I'm going through now, I apologize if it sounds selfish, but with mum, with her dementia, I've got to be my best self to be able to help her. I've got to be at my best, and I can't be that all the time. But running certainly helps. And the people I've got around me, my wife, my friends, my running punks buddies, my other running buddies, have, you know, certainly helped.
Well, and that's absolutely fantastic and perfect place to leave today's conversation. So I definitely encourage everybody to go and have a look in the show notes. We'll put the details of where they can sponsor you there. And good luck with the rest of your challenge. And I'll be about at London on Sunday, so I'll try and give you a wave if I see you.
Brilliant, my mate. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time, yeah?
Thanks again to Colin for joining us on this week's episode of Running Tales, and good luck to him in the rest of his challenge and to take on that dreaded treadmill. If you completed London Marathon at the weekend, well done to you too. What a superb event it was, of course. And I can't finish this episode without saying a massive well done to my wife, Michelle, our co-presenter here on Running Tales, for taking on the 26.2 miles herself at the weekend. Thanks again for joining us. If you like what we do, go and give us that 5-star rating wherever you listen, and I'll see you again next week.